I run away from everything. I'll find a way to cast away my fucking dreams. I'm so unsure of my own course. I separate the hope in me from everything that doesn't fit reality. I know she says, it's in my head.
Welcome back to the Movie Draft House. I'm your host, Mark, and joined by co-host, Jeff.
I hope you got your big point. Let me have a sip of... Let me have a sip of some ginger ale. Just take this as my greeting and pretend it went flawless.
I don't have ginger ale for you.
I have my own.
Okay, good, because delicious. All I have is Diet Coke.
Not brought to you by Canada Dry.
However, Canada Dry, get at us. Hit up Movie Draft House at
Hit me up.
Gmail.com.
Send me a case of it. You don't even have to pay us much. Just send me a case of Canada Dry.
Before we get into what we watched this week, we got to plug some music. And the music this month is brought to you by the alternative rock band Here's to Now with their song Thieves. Jeff, what did you think about the music?
Well, full disclosure, I haven't heard it yet because the first episode had not dropped.
Ooh. Even though I sent it to you yesterday.
You did.
Be sure you hit the show notes. If you're watching on YouTube, hit the little read more button. Get the show notes. Hit the links to all of their social media accounts. Give them a like, a follow, and a subscribe. They're doing big things, and we appreciate them allowing us to use their music here on our podcast. Jeff.
Yes, sir.
What did we watch this
week? Well, buddy, I was texting you as I was watching it because you picked a hell of a movie. We watched Killer Joe.
Yep.
Rubber Baby Buggy Bumpers. There we go. We watched Killer Joe from... okay. That was not mine, but from 2011, starring Emile Hirsch, Juno Temple, Thomas Hayden Church, and the reason we're all here, Matthew McConaughey month, he, of course, is in this. This film is directed by William Friedkin, who we just discovered has quite the filmography. He directed The Exorcist, a 12 Angry Men remake that I have seen, and it's fine. What else? Did we see anything else? To Live and Die in L.A.? He's done some Twilight Zone episodes.
He did Rules of Engagement, which was pretty good. The Hunted, which is a pretty good kind of cat and mouse thriller.
Now,
yeah,
we got to talk about this because he directed Killer Joe. I'm guessing, had not seen this.
I swore that I had, but as I was watching, I was like,
there's no way you could forget watching this.
Yeah, by the end of it, I was like, I don't think I've seen this before.
There's no way you could forget watching this film. I think people with Alzheimer's would be able to remember, hell yeah, I saw Killer Joe. Right. That shit was insane. Right. I texted you, I'm like, Mark, this shit is crazy. And it just kept getting crazier. And then it had this finale that was just batshit. What did you think of this movie?
Yeah, so, we get Matthew McConaughey as the villain here,
Is he?
Yeah.
I'm going to argue that everyone is the villain.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I mean, this movie is...
Like, all of them are bad people. Now, this... You know me. I don't really like movies where I can't, like, connect with a character. And it's like all the characters are horrible people. This takes that Game of Thrones sort of rule set. Everybody in this movie fucking sucks. They are murderers, abusers, you know, terrible people. All of them.
Yeah. I guess Juno Temple's the least... She's the least
She's the
bad
most
here, but
innocent of them.
Sure,
she seems
but,
to
said,
have,
but she's still on board with killing her mom. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so the whole plot of this is this family, a strange family, decides they're going to... Emil Hirsch owes some debts to some bookies, and he decides that he's going to bump his mother off because his sister, Dottie, played by Juno Temple, gets the insurance.
Right.
That's a pretty bare bones premise, and I like the simplicity of the premise. And it's a framework that allows the movie to just say, hold tight. I got some shit to show you.
I got some shit to show you. And so, like, this movie is very seedy. It's very dirty.
Yes. Oh, great word, seedy. Yes.
The whole family lives in a, you know, like, single wide trailer in Texas.
Thomas Hayden Church does not own a clean T-shirt in this film.
No.
I guess Thomas there's a scene when he goes to the insurance agency, he's actually cleaned
he's
up.
He's wearing a tie.
When he's in his house, he wears the filthiest clothes.
Well, he's also got like the one, what do they call them? Long johns or I don't even
know. Yeah, yeah. But they're like cut off at the thigh.
Yeah.
It's like he shortened his long johns.
I mean, but right from the first scene of the movie where we get Gina Gershon's bush.
Right. That's where I first was like, well, Mark, I'm like, we got to whip out the bush and boob counter and maybe even the dong counter at some point. Now,
we did not get any dong, but
we have a new challenger, yeah, no. Right? So unarguably on this podcast, we both agree that the greatest ass in cinema belongs to Van Damme.
Van Damme. Yeah, right.
However, we have a new
McConaughey
challenger.
Yeah.
He whips his ass out, and it's fantastic. It is smooth and rounded and sculpted. It's not quite as toned and out there and as Van Damme's. I still think Van Damme is the champion, but it's a pretty good effort by McConaughey here.
Yeah. No, it's... It's just the film. I mean, and Emil
you
Hirsch
stay in the ass corner. Okay,
no, we can. I mean, we
no,
we
yeah,
can
no,
stay
go
in
ahead, Emil
corner.
Hirsch. Let's move to Emil Hirsch.
I just this film is riddled with awesome performances.
Bro,
particularly Thomas Hayden Church's performance.
Yes, he's so good.
He is. He just takes this passive approach to the entire story, and then at the end where he's got a, you know, he's either standing up for his wife or he's on board with what Matthew McConaughey's doing. He's just like, oh, sorry, you made your bed, and he just sits down. He sits in a chair, and
there's this just weird thing at the end.
It's fantastic.
Everybody is just pretty much on Team Joe, like. Even yeah. after, so Gina Gershon's in this, who I haven't seen in a movie in ages, but
hit the back catalog for Face Off.
Oh right, yeah, there you go. That's the last time I probably saw her in a film. but she's fantastic in this. Like everyone brings their A game. Like
yeah,
nobody's phoning it in. This is just good shit. And even there are parts that are a bit much for me. There are two specific parts. But
what are they, Jeff?
Okay, so let's just say trigger warning for sexual assault here. The scene, so essentially they want to hire Matthew McConaughey, who's Killer Joe, to kill and cover up the murder of their mother. But they don't have any money. So as a retainer, they essentially let him have their sister, Juno Temple, Dottie, as a, like his girlfriend. And he can do whatever he wants, I guess. So there's their first scene together where initially he's like walking in and he's being very calm and friendly. Like there's something... up until this point, Killer Joe is actually kind of likable, right? He's the suave, don't fuck with me sort of assassin guy. You know, there's even though, yeah, he's a killer and a bad person, there's something likable about McConaughey's performance, right? He's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And he wears a hat.
Wears the hat. He's got, he's
a
cool.
Police officer.
There are just two points in the movie where he loses his cool. And I don't mean getting angry. So in this scene, you know, she's like was wearing this dress but didn't like to wear it. So she was in her regular clothes. And he tells her to go get changed. And then he like grabs her hands and puts them down his pants. And he's like, "Do you feel that?" "Yeah." And then they swap places and he goes, "How old are you?" She goes, 12. And he goes, "Me too." And I was just like, what the fuck is happening? And then they hook up, right? That part I was like, what the fuck? It was the first point.
But we should
like,
say we should say that we know that Juno Temple is not 12 in this movie.
No, the character isn't. But he was essentially so there's a lot going on here. And a lot of things that aren't said. That I think are.
I'm just trying to point out that the film does not depict child rape.
Yeah, he's not. Yeah, exactly. She's in her 20s, early 20s, probably. Yeah, he's not sleeping with a 12-year-old. But he's essentially they're like kind of going back in their memories. So there's this thing where they say they suspect that Juno Temple is a virgin, and even at one point in the film, she says that she is. But I get this feeling she's a victim of incest. Emil Hirsch at one point dreams of her naked.
Yeah.
There's some sort of weird ownership over her that he has. Thomas Hayden Church is a physical abuser. He pimps her out. He pimps her out, which is obviously a problem. So she's grown up in this thing. And there's when children are abused sometimes what happens is they get emotionally stuck at that age and Dottie is a very immature character in the sense that she is very childlike in her talking and her actions and you know she just comes across as a 12-year-old in a lot of ways so she's fully grown so to me when she's saying that she's going back to that first point in her life where she had some sort of sexual interaction, which I think was possibly abuse at the hands of one of her family members.
Right. It's that depiction of her character. I think you nailed it. Is she is a she has been likely we don't see her get physically abused in this movie, but emotionally
she
abused,
does it
sexually
with
abused.
The dress thing. She doesn't get straight up beaten, but she gets thrown around a bit.
Yeah.
Certainly emotionally abused.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And so I do think in Juno Temple's performance here, and admittedly, I have not seen her in a ton of stuff, the most recent being Ted Lasso, where she plays just a very plain character, not a lot of depth to her performance there, but I think in this role, she was very good in her depiction of, you know, this object, essentially.
She is given away by her family to this guy without her consent.
Well, Killer Joe tells everybody, "Hey, if you can't pay me, I'll kill you. But I will take a retainer," and he just names his price essentially, and it's Dottie. And so I get the plight of these characters, but then when push comes to shove, you know, Emil Hirsch can't essentially take care of business, and Thomas Hayden Church simply doesn't want to. And I just think, man, the dynamic of, you know, hey, this is my daughter, and I'm allowing this assassin that has been hired to kill my ex-wife now,
dude,
to just kind of
moves
have his way with
into the house.
Right.
Killer Joe lives in that house. Like, they get home and he comes out of the bedroom where he's been slamming his daughter and is like, "Hey guys, what's for dinner?" It's crazy. It's so wild.
We should mention that the whole thing about killing Emil Hirsch's mom, Emil Hirsch and Dottie's mom, is that he was told that she has a life insurance policy.
Yeah, $50,000 life insurance policy.
That goes to Dottie should she die. And so Emil Hirsch, in, like we mentioned it, he's like, "Oh, shit, I owe this money to these bookies. I can have her killed and make some money and pay these guys." And that's where everything unravels. But all right, so that was the first scene. What was the second scene?
We'll get to it.
Okay.
I'll let you know. You already know, but we'll get to it.
Yeah, I know. Right. So one of the just scenes that I was just like, "Oh, this is weird," is when Joe tells Emil Hirsch's character to get in the car, and then they go to a restaurant.
I loved that.
I thought it was weird. It's because it's happening in broad day. All right, go ahead.
So Killer Joe's getting off work, right? And they've, you know, the day before he's like, "I'm going to do the job tomorrow. I'm going to kill her." And so as Joe is leaving work, Emil Hirsch is outside and is like, hey, I changed my mind. You know, I've never done anything like this before. I'm not ready to have someone killed. You know, I'm glad I caught you before you got it done." And Joe says, "Get in the car."
Which, I mean, you don't get in the car.
I wouldn't have got in the car.
Right.
But at the same time, Killer Joe is the kind of guy where, well, if I don't get in the car, he's probably going to kill me anyway.
Yeah.
So they go to the restaurant, like you were saying. I didn't want to interrupt, but I wanted to set the scene because I really think that the scene needs that context of Emil Hirsch going there to stop the murder.
Yeah, and so they go to the restaurant and they park next to a car. It's in the parking lot and they both get out and Joe pops the trunk and there's Emil Hirsch's mom dead. And
loved it. I thought that was so good. Right. And I didn't see it coming. Like, I thought that he was going to take him to do the job with him.
Right.
I did not
predict. Yeah, that would have been good too.
It would have been. But I did not predict that she was already in the trunk.
Yeah, and so what I didn't understand, and like it kind of is kind of unbelievable to think about, is that they move her body to that was wrapped up in, I guess, a blanket or whatever, and they move her body to the driver's seat of this car that they park next to, and then they proceed to stage the scene where I'm imagining that, you know, she passed out because she was drunk and had a cigarette in her mouth and then lit herself on fire and such
right.
the car.
So I'm watching this and I'm like, we got to go to the police corner because I feel like, and the closest I can get to it, as I've said, I'm the internet guy, you're the police guy, someone to let you have the final say. But I've watched a fair bit of true crime and I feel like that they can tell that an accelerant was used outside the vehicle to start the fire.
Right.
I feel like that would be so, pretty obvious.
And, you know, they would do toxicology, you know, on the body. And that would point to, like, I don't know. We're never told how she was killed. So
right.
There is some unknown to this to where, okay, like he could have, you know, he could have poisoned her. He could have done any number of things. And
yeah, she didn't seem to have any grievous wounds. Like, you know, right. Her head hadn't fallen off, much like Petey and Dumb and Dumber. But so I've got to guess that they're.
But also,
Killer Joe
like,
kind of has a lot of means. Like he could go in there and, you know, just have her get drunk to the point where she has alcohol poisoning. You know, I don't know.
Sure. But like also, you know, she was wrapped up in a blanket, and so her body would be covered in different fibers. And
but do you think the fire takes care of the fiber? You know,
It depends. It would depend on if like if she had breathed in any of the fiber. You know, if like how did he kill her? You know, did he put a blanket over her mouth? And yeah, I don't know. So there's just different. But really, my grievance with this scene is that they did it all in broad daylight in the backdrop of this restaurant.
It was nighttime.
I don't think it was.
It was okay. It was closed, bro. There was only one car in that parking lot.
All right. Well, even if it was, they're still right outside this restaurant.
Yes. And like, and I would worry about security cameras, you know?
Right. Everything. I just thought it was a weird choice to have the backdrop of this scene, which is an effective scene, be this restaurant that has all these neon signs in the window and
yes,
and it was an odd choice for where they decided to do it, and it kind of threw me out of it a little bit because I'm like, somebody's got to be nearby, somebody's got to be seeing them do this.
And the accelerant thing was what got me. Was them lighting it on fire from the outside.
Right. And cutting the gas line. And
right. And that line would probably melt. But I don't know. I agree. It does kind of seem like there were some things here to me as a casual observer that I think detective work would be able to determine that this was foul play.
Sure. But then there also lies the rub.
Not, yeah.
But the rub is that Matthew McConaughey is a detective.
Is the cops.
In the right.
Exactly. Yeah.
So there is the thought process that he could be investigating his own crime. So,
which he says he's done before, right? He doesn't always get them, but they're like, when he does, he's like, ooh, it's really good.
Right. Yeah. So I guess, I mean, you know, talking through it, I guess I can see, you know, the carelessness, I guess, of perhaps drawing attention to your crime by doing it so close to a business and just maybe being so lackadaisical in how you're doing it. But
my kind of thing is I felt like he scouted it out, right? I feel like that place was chosen on purpose. And that he had scouted it out. Like, he knew
her
car's
there. You know?
There were no cars
like
there.
Like, why? No. Her car.
Yes.
So, it leads me to believe that, like, did he come and abduct her before? And, you know, I don't know. There's a lot of... That was a very quick scene. It was effective, but it was quick. And I think it was done that way on purpose, so you didn't
draw too many...
Yeah, we
didn't get the complete story.
All right. So then we find out that there isn't...
You're breaking up, but I think it's my... There we go. We're good. Never mind. It was me.
I'm about to say, I took care of the
internet. No, it was definitely me. I had my VPN on, and as soon as I turned it off, everything got perfect. So.
Okay, good.
No, your internet is incredible.
Incredible. What happens next? Where did we?
So we go back home.
Oh, they go.
Right?
They go to the funeral. They go to the funeral.
Right. House. Well, they go to the insurance place first. The funeral's after the insurance place, so they go to the insurance place where they find out that indeed she does have a policy. However, the money actually went to her boyfriend Wayne. I think his name is
Rex.
Rex, and Man, they set this up so well. Like, I didn't see a lot of this stuff coming, like the twists and turns in this movie. So, you know, they establish, like, Rex had it, got the funds. And then they're like, well, where'd you hear about the insurance? Well, through Rex. And he's like, oh, shit. And he goes, well, who told you about Killer Joe? And then he doesn't even say anything. Right. He just breaks down because he's like, fuck. But they also had established earlier that Gina Gershon has a extramarital relationship with someone.
Right. And she's on the phone at work. And
Yeah, that phone at work. She's got these pictures of him, you know, doing you know, the business. And then
there
like,
was some that picture was like porn. One of them
was was a full penetration.
Yeah,
which was crazy. But they had they set it up so well where you see she's at the hotel and her boyfriend comes and you never see his face and you never hear his name, but you do see he drives a yellow Corvette. And then later on, you see Matthew McConaughey pull over this yellow Corvette. And then he says, "Hey, Rex." And then it all clicks, right? You know, yeah. Oh, she was sleeping with her husband's ex-wife's boyfriend. Right. And then, like, later on in the movie, you get to this lengthy finale of a scene. Like, this is like the end of the movie is like a 20-minute scene, largely comprised of dialogue, shot in one room in this kitchen in this mobile home, and it is riveting until it gets too weird. Like the whole scene where he is talking to Gina Gershon and he knows the truth and he's pressuring her into it, and he does it so slowly. It's wonderful. It's really good.
Yeah, so let me ask you this question before we dive into this finale.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard anybody call KFC K-Fried C?
Only in this film, and I did make a mental note, K-Fried
C. Because it's the weirdest fucking thing.
Well, they're not allowed to say KFC, maybe. You know, they didn't. KFC didn't pay for product placement. But right. I almost feel like it'd be better if they just said fried chicken.
Right. Or like, just made up something. You're right.
Yeah, because it takes me out of the movie a little bit when they say K-Fried C. Because I'm like, what? No one's ever said. But if they just said, hey, we got fried chicken. Everyone loves fried chicken.
Right.
We'd be on board. We wouldn't care. But the fact that they made a point of K-Fried C was very funny to me.
And multiple characters say it.
Oh, yeah. Characters. We got K-Fried C. Oh, shit. The gourmet fried chicken, K-Fried C.
And then, so the scene starts without Emil Hirsch. It's a large part of it takes place before Emil Hirsch's character arrives. And
the best part.
Yeah. It's,
like, so we can't even get to Emil Hirsch. Because so much shit happens. Like, he's found, Killer Joe has found these photos that she has of Gina Gershon and Rex getting it on. And she's, no, that's my husband. And he goes up to him, he goes, is this your dick? Take a close look. You know, you might have been drunk. Is that your dick? Nope. It's not my dick. Like, and she...
Thomas Hayden Church is like,
he just
sits there and he goes, nope, not my dick.
Not my dick. And they and then she gets lippy with Joe. And every time she insults him, he like strangles her and like threatens her in different ways. And
he full on punches her in the face.
Well, and it's like a hell of a one because it's like immediately bleeding. And then at one point she says, fuck you or something. And he's like, if you insult me again, I'm going to cut your face off and wear it as my own, which I thought was crazy.
And then he's like, do you want me to cut your face off?
No. And then we get to the second part of this film that just took me out. That really, I had a hard time with, but at the same time was like, wow, this movie just goes for it. So Matthew McConaughey grabs himself a drumstick of K-Fried C. And then holds it where his wiener would be. Yes, I said wiener because I've said the D word too many times this episode. Ooh. And he asks her to suck it. And then he acts like he's actually being fellated.
I think he actually like gets off.
He comes to orgasm.
Yes.
All while, again, Thomas Hayden Church is just sitting there. Craziness. And like, yeah, I just, what the f-
And like the camera angle,
it's her view, right?
Right. It's her view looking up at him while he's
really enjoying what's happening to this piece of chicken. It's fucking crazy.
So then he comes to orgasm.
Yes, he definitely does. Like, this has been a dream of his for a long, long time.
And he finally pushes her away. And like, Gina Gershon's face, she's got chicken on her lips for the rest of the movie.
She's bleeding everywhere. And he's like, isn't she beautiful? I don't really have an opinion. And it pisses off Killer Joe. Wrong answer, man. It's crazy.
Yeah, and then so
and Emil Hirsch comes home.
No. Then they all get on the same page.
They set the table for dinner, right?
Right, because he had flipped it. So then he sets it back up.
You're not gonna let K-Fried C go to waste.
No, you can't.
Can't be.
It's good. It's good fried chicken. And so Emil Hirsch comes in, and he's like, "Oh, we got some good K-Fried C. All right, let's
go. We do, buddy." Got a full bucket.
And so they sit at the table and like, and then Joe's acting like everything's cool.
What gets me is Emil Hirsch never at any point acknowledges the fact that Gina Gershon looks like she's had the shit beat out of her.
Oh yeah, he does. He
says something about her running.
Right. Her mascara is running.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, fuck you. And like, he doesn't care. It's just, these people are horrible. These are the worst people. No one in this group, because now we have all of our main characters at this table, and none of them are worth saving. They are all beyond repair. I still think, yes, Juno Temple probably at this point still could be rehabilitated.
I don't think no one in this movie cares about either any other character. Except maybe Emil Hirsch, but we don't really know the depth of.
I don't know, man. I feel like it's possession, right? He's not, because there's a point where she's like, "I want to be with Joe."
Yeah,
and she does. I think that because it's her first sexual intercourse, probably, that she's kind of got a thing for. I mean, it's Matthew McConaughey. He's a good-looking guy, second best ass in cinema, according to our ranking list. And I could see why she would do that.
Well, so Emil Hirsch, we see like before he arrives in a different scene, he purchases a gun on the street. And his, you know, it's his idea, and we're led to believe that he's going to go kill Joe. Because he's going to take Dottie away. And they're going to go to Peru or some shit.
Yeah.
And they're going to drive. Yeah, they're going to drive
there. Getting out of the state, you know.
What was the most unbelievable aspect was they're going
to
drive
to Peru.
Just
go to Mexico. They're in Texas.
Right.
Just go start there.
So he shows up in the house and he's, you know, he's like, oh, everybody's gathered around tables. They sits down. And then Joe puts it all out there that he knows that Gina Gershon's character is kind of the mastermind behind the
well, he had already
behind
put that
everything.
Out there. But
he put it out there to Gershon that he knew that she was,
and Thomas Hayden Church was there.
Right, but had he already put it out there that
the
insurance was $100,000, not $50,000. Okay.
Yeah. All of that like Thomas Hayden Church is aware of.
Okay,
and I think by the fact that Dottie was in the next room, she was probably aware. Emil Hirsch is probably the only one who didn't know at this point.
So what was the? Why did he pull the gun?
Because he said he's going to get married to Juno Temple.
Oh yeah,
he said, "Hey, Dottie, I asked her to marry me, and she agreed." And everybody it's so weird, like. Thomas Hayden Church is like full Team Joe at this point. And even Gina Gershon is like, hell yeah, this is great news. It's crazy. And they're like clapping and yay. And of course, Emil Hirsch is not happy. And that's when he pulls the gun and it just starts to go south from there. The gun gets knocked.
But what's crazy, this made me think of it. What's crazy, this whole scene, is that Joe starts wailing on Emil Hirsch, knocks the gun out of his hand.
He's going to kill him.
Starts beating him with a can of whatever. And Gina Gershon, like, holds one part of Emil Hirsch down.
And then
Thomas Hayden Church dives at his legs.
I got him, Joe. Like, they are done with this. There's a point where, like, when he finds
this is his son. This is Thomas Hayden Church's son.
And remember,
we
already know that he's given away his daughter, and he's totally cool with that.
Right.
And so this isn't really that much of a stretch, but there's also the scene when they find out the insurance is bad that he just sells, why don't you go kill yourself or whatever, you know? So, like, this whole group hates Emil Hirsch with the exception of Dottie.
I got him, Joe.
I was like, what is happening?
I was like, holy shit. Like, how did... And I understand that Emil Hirsch kind of... I can see why they did despise him. But to, like, watch your son get beat to death? That's next level.
And I think, but at the same time, they all know that Joe is... He's the king of the jungle. He's the lion, right? He's the guy, even though technically the... lionesses run the, you know, pride. Anyway, but he's the alpha dog in this group. He's the guy, like, no matter what, you're going to lose to this guy. Right. Like, Thomas Hayden Church knows he can't beat him. Gina Gershon has been beaten into submission. So they're just like, this is our new leader. We're just going to follow this guy.
It is... So the gun gets
knocked out of her hand, right?
Yeah.
And so she just is like, stop beating Emil, you know, Emil Hirsch, stop beating him. And he doesn't. So she shoots and misses everyone. And it kind of startles everyone. And then she shoots. How did this happen? Because it all went so fast.
She shot
Thomas Hayden Church in the gut.
In the stomach, yeah.
And then she shot
Emil Hirsch.
Did she shoot Emil Hirsch?
Yeah, he gets shot in the heart, maybe? I don't know.
In the side, I think. And then she turns the gun on Joe. So the only person who's not been shot.
Then she says that I'm pregnant. And then you see this elated look of on Joe. And
like, woohoo, we're going to have a baby killer.
Right. And then the movie shows her put her finger back on the trigger, but we never see her the gun doesn't go off. We don't see her pull the trigger. It's just meant to allude that, hey, maybe she's going to kill him too or shoot him too.
In my opinion, in these films where you have this sort of open-ended, and this one I didn't mind. Like, sometimes I feel like open-ended ones are weird, but I think the movie tells you enough that she's probably pulling that trigger.
Yeah, right. And I think it did a good enough job of showing that she doesn't want to be here anymore. She doesn't want to be with Emil Hirsch's character. She doesn't want to be in her dad's house. She doesn't want to be with Joe. But I did enjoy the fact that it did not show it. We're just meant to believe that she pulled that trigger.
Yeah, and the movie earned that at this point to me, because it had been so explicit in everything else that when it finally gave you this mystery, you're like, I'm fine with it, because everything else has been spelled out for me. At least that's how I felt. I was like, it was an earned way to end the film. And then when the credits roll, you get the song Strokin'. I'll be strokin'. Which is so funny. I think it's the same song that played when Emil Hirsch was getting beat up by the bookies. Really funny.
I didn't even catch that.
It just put the icing on the cake for me. I'll be stroking, which is a really funny song. Let me find the artist. maybe you can reach out to him. From Clarence Carter. Yeah. It's just called Strokin' by Clarence Carter. And it just, like, I sat there and listened to the whole song while the credits rolled and just was like, whoa. And then I texted you. I'm like, well, Mark, you found one. I don't know how you did. So
I don't know.
I wholeheartedly recommend this movie's out. You got to have the taste for it. Like, if you've heard what we've talked about's happened in the film and some of that turned you off, then it's not for you. But, and generally speaking, this type of movie isn't for me. I usually don't like when everybody's horrible, but everybody kind of gets their comeuppance. Like, yeah. Everyone ends up in a bad place. I don't know. I found it so riveting and thrilling, and the twists and turns I was here for, and I just rode this roller coaster, and at the end, I was like, I'm going to get back in line. I really, really like this movie. It's wild and has a really good shot to be on my top five come the end of the year. I really enjoyed this.
Yeah, I just looked up the Rotten Tomato. It was 80% on Rotten Tomato and had an audience score of 61. So that's pretty good. I'm going to recommend it. It is a movie that features a ton of bad people, but like you said, they all kind of get what's coming to them.
And I think all of their motivations are clear.
Yeah.
And that really helps.
For sure. And I think, and it's an hour and 45, so it never stops moving. It always, and even if the finale is 20 minutes long and it's all dialogue, it is, like you called it, earned dialogue, and it's an earned scene where everybody comes together at the end, and we get this ambiguous ending, and I think it is a well earned ending, because we're meant to sympathize with Dottie's character there at the end, and you know, her telling Joe, hey, I'm pregnant, and seeing his reaction. That's the first time I think he smiled the entire movie. And just seeing him like kind of just elated. And then, you know, to get the presumption that she's going to try to kill him. You know, I think it's a good movie. It's going to probably be in my top five at the end of the year as well. You know, depending on how we do.
Right. You never know. Like, I say that now, I feel that now, but when we go back and actually look at all 52 films, am I still going to feel that way? You know, I don't know, but as of right now, when it ended, I was like, hell yeah. Now this is what I'm talking about. Like, it just,
that's good. It's good. It's
entertaining. You know, like I always say, the only thing a movie should be worried about is entertaining you. And this is just nonstop. It's awesome.
100%. So what are we watching next week?
So next week, let me pull it up here. It's called Frailty from 2001. So, you know, I picked it because we're going back a little ways, back beyond 2017 where Mark's seen films. And we're going to watch Frailty. It stars Matthew McConaughey, but get this, it's both starring and directed by Bill Paxton.
It
also features my man, Powers Booth. And if you don't know who Powers Booth is, then you clearly haven't seen Sudden Death starring Jean-Claude Van Damme. But he also is more notably known as Curly Bill in the movie Tombstone. I love Powers Booth.
Yeah, first, so
he has the best name of all time.
Powers Booth. Yeah, he does have it. It's a very strong name.
Very good name. I'm going to name my cat Powers.
You should have a cat and a dog. One named Powers, the other named Booth. I feel like Booth is a dog's name. Hey, Booth. Anyways, once again, I want to give a shout out to the music this month. Here's to Now with their song Thieves. Be sure to hit the show notes where you can find all the links to their social media. They're doing big things, and we appreciate them. If you want to get at the podcast, you can follow us on all your favorite social media platforms at Movie Draft House. We're on Twitter, TikTok, Instagram, here as you're watching on YouTube. Be sure to hit the subscribe button so you don't miss any future content, because we're doing big things on all the places. If you want to follow Jeff on Twitter, and just let them know that, hey man, it's okay to do more than one podcast.
I do more than one. I don't understand.
This is called a segue. This is called a segue, Jeff.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
God. You can follow him at Podcast by Jeff.
Yes. Where you can also find my other podcast, Chronologically, where right now we're going through all the films of M. Night Shyamalan in chronological order. Having a good time. Now, if you want to get in touch with Mark and let him know your favorite way to enjoy some K-Fried C, you can find him on Twitter at I Heard You Liked.
I wonder if there is a section, and I say I wonder, like I don't know. And I don't know because I haven't looked it up, but it probably exists. A whole section of the internet devoted to pleasuring with...
filleting fried chicken.
Chicken, yeah. That's why I'm not going to look it up.
I'm
but
not
I imagine
either. That's too risky of a search. That is too risky.
All right, so if you had to fillet somebody...
Okay.
...with chicken.
Oh,
drumstick,
still chicken?
Drumstick.
Oh, definitely, I think drumstick. Just it makes
flat.
The most sense. I mean, okay, if I'm eating a piece of fried chicken,
yeah.
Thigh, every time. If I have to fillet it, it has to be a drum. The other pieces, they don't work. Maybe a wing. I think a wing could work. You know what? A wing flap. Can I do that?
full wing, huh? Okay. All right, I get it.
I think I could full wing it. I got one throw to wing.
You know, I do enjoy our conversations here on this podcast. I will tell you that we do not shy away from the conversations. And I commend us both for that. From turtle porn to wing
you.
Porn for chicken porn, chicken
nope,
fried
that's you.
Kentucky fried chicken porn.
K-fried C. Get
K-fried
it right.
C porn. It just, man, we got all corners of the internet here on this podcast. All right. Jeff.
Yes.
Any words of wisdom?
I'll be stroking.